Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Let me say some congratulations off the top here to Mecole Hardman, once again working his way back to the Super Bowl in his second year in the NFL, second chance to go back to the big game. What a career he's kind of off to when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs, and what a day of football it was yesterday in both the NFC and the AFC championship games. And, you know, thinking about Hardman here for a moment, it kind of brings to mind for me exactly where I think Georgia's offense is trying to go as you head towards 2021 in the second year of Todd Monken, the first full year of JT Daniels as your starting quarterback. I thought our buddy Connor Riley had a very interesting piece up about this at DogNation.com. And using Hardman as a reference point here, I think it's easy to understand both what Georgia's trying to be, and to be frank, and this is one of the reasons why we're trying to be a little allergic to some of the hype that's out there, that's potentially out there. We're not going to try to tell anybody over the course of this offseason that the transition to, you know, megawatt, high-powered offense, the likes of which that have won recent national championships, we're not going to do anything to make that sound any easier than it really is, because once again, when you use Hardman as your reference point, I think you're really left to determine, man, the work to get Georgia where it wants to go for the upcoming season is just going to be really challenging, because Hardman really is one of the more fun players to watch in the National Football League, playing on one of the more fun teams to watch when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs. And he showed some of that dynamic ability. He showed some of that fun when he was right here at Georgia as well. In his first year on offense, remember, when he signed with Georgia in the class of 2016, spent the first year at UGA apprenticing to potentially be a defensive back. But then on offense in 2017, that's when Georgia kind of came into its own. It won the SEC that year. And Georgia averaged 35.4 points per game along the way to winning that SEC championship there in 2017. Hardman's big year happened the next year in 2018 when he had more than 500 yards receiving, had seven touchdowns. That was his big year in 2018. But Georgia's big year was Hardman's first year on the offensive side of the ball in 2017 when the Dogs won the league and the team averaged more than 35 points a game. But something pretty amazing happened to the SEC after that. After Georgia won the league in 2017, a lot with this league changed, seemingly forever, over the course of the next 3 years' worth of SEC champions. The following year, Alabama won the league in 2018. They averaged 45.6 points per game. The following year, 2019, LSU won the league, also won the national championship. They averaged 48.4 points per game. And at the time, I think many of us would have said, this is the pinnacle. This is as high as it gets. This is as good as an offense can be. This is as powerful as it can be in terms of collecting yards and scoring points and all the things that LSU put on display in 2019. Well, the following year, the most recent college football season in 2020, Alabama actually exceeded what LSU had done the previous year. LSU had averaged 48.4 points per game. Alabama in an SEC-only schedule, no McNeese States to beat up on, in other words, they averaged 48.5 points per game. When you really look at, you know, Hardman's year for Georgia in 2018, when he had the seven touchdowns, the more than 500 yards receiving, that actually stands as a pretty high water mark for Georgia under Kirby Smart. There have only been eight instances in the Smart era, which dates back to 2016, of a receiver exceeding 500 yards. So what Hardman did at Georgia was a pretty big deal. But when you think about what you have to be in order to be what an LSU was in 2019, what Alabama has been in 2018 and 2020, you don't just need a guy like Mecole Hardman doing what he has done for Georgia. You need multiples of Mecole Hardmans. Let me give you a couple more stats here. Look back at Alabama from last year. Alabama has three receivers on last year's team that exceed 500 yards receiving. Devontae Smith had nearly 1,900 yards receiving. You want to know the way that you add up and get almost 49 points a game in SEC play and through the college football playoff? You have to have those levels of performances. Go back and look at LSU the previous year before that. LSU has also four guys that exceed 500 yards receiving, which was, as I said before, it's been kind of a high watermark, for Georgia. Just even eclipsing that number has been a little bit of a challenge. But in addition to the four guys that went over 500 yards receiving for LSU last year, you had two guys that exceeded 1,500 yards receiving, including Ja'Marr Chase, who had nearly 1,800 yards, and of course, won the Biletnikoff along the way. So you watch Mecole Hardman, you watch the explosive level of offense that he's providing the Kansas City Chiefs after kind of messing up, muffing a punt to begin the game, scored a touchdown after that, and you remember that he also brought some of that same explosive brand of football to Georgia when he was on this Georgia roster as well. And you think about what the Georgia offense has a chance to be in 2021, you realize, okay, for Georgia to get there, you've got to have multiples of Mecole Hardman doing something very similar to that, and you've got to have one or two guys who themselves become kind of a multiple of what Mecole Hardman was if you truly want to be able to get that done. Now, it all sounds really hard, and in some cases, maybe even sounds something close to impossible that Georgia could have that kind of offense success. But listen, there are some reasons to think that maybe it, even if it's not easy to do, even if it's not probable, it is still possible that Georgia could have that kind of offensive breakthrough. I mean, after all, I told you before, there haven't been a lot of guys at Georgia exceed 500 yards receiving thus far in the Smart Era, but two of those guys were last year, George Pickens, Kyaris Jackson, working in Todd Monken's offense. And when you look at what LSU did in 2019, the big breakthrough they had, not much of that would have been predicted by what happened in 2018. So Georgia does have a chance to do these kinds of things this upcoming season. And for Georgia, I don't believe there's ever been a year under Smart where it seems like more pieces were in place offensively than exist right now. In fact, I love one of the things that JT Daniels, the Georgia quarterback, said near the end of the season about what he was getting a chance to work with and what he thought at the time, maybe not fully announcing yet he was coming back to Georgia, but what he thought he might also get a chance to work with in 2021. Certainly when you talk about the big offensive breakthroughs that exist in the SEC, teams like Alabama and LSU who have had a lot of players who've looked a lot like Mecole Hardman, certainly when JT Daniels looks at some of that around the talent at Georgia, what he gets to work with offensively, he at least sees the potential for great things to come. Let me let you hear what Daniels has said about that in the past.
There's a lot of talent on the roster, and you know, there's guys that, you know, as fans, not many have seen yet. You know, people seen Arian Smith make one catch. Jermaine's growing a lot. You have a whole young group of O-linemen that work every day. You know, I've got to see him grow, you know, guys like Cedric Van Pran, see how they attack the game. I think you have a really good class of young guys that aren't just talented, but are also guys that, you know, enjoy the game of football, and, you know, they show up every day with a good attitude, and that, you know, they're here to learn and get better. So it's something good to see, and something I think you'll get to see, you know, as they grow, you'll see a lot of it next year.
So let me see if I can kind of wrap all of this conversation up. When you watch Hardman going back to the Super Bowl again, getting a chance to play in an high-powered NFL offense like the Kansas City Chiefs, it's easy to look at that and say, wow, Georgia needs more of that. And when you compare it to the offenses that have led the SEC champions over the course of the last 3 years, a couple times for Alabama, once for LSU in 2019, when you make those comparisons, I think you kind of get the sense of, wow, just how many high-powered players it really takes to match an offensive performance like that. Can Georgia do it this upcoming season? That's what a lot of this offseason talk is going to be about, the work that needs to be done to get Georgia where it wants to go. Let me kind of shift gears here and do something completely different for a moment. There is an update to provide on the ongoing search for a Georgia defensive backs coach. Football Scoop had reported that Glenn Ford, very respected personal coach, a guy who's kind of, you know, working with a lot of the defensive backs, up-and-coming guys, recruits that have signed at Georgia. Glenn Ford got a chance to interview, according to Football Scoop, for that Georgia defensive backs coaching spot. And in fact, Ford also talked to an outlet, the Athens Banner-Herald, about his interview and kind of what all went on with that. Let me show you this quote that Glenn Ford gives to the Athens Banner-Herald about interviewing for the defensive backs coaching spot. Ford says, "I'm a Georgia boy, was born in Columbus, and had a great opportunity to go play at my state school. So, of course, I'd be interested in coaching at my state school. That's where I played. That's my alma mater. To get an opportunity to coach at it would be a dream come true." Once again, this is a very well-respected personal coach, a guy that kind of tutors up-and-coming defensive backs, Glenn Ford. Apparently, according to Football Scoop, they were the first to report that he'd interview for the defensive backs coaching spot, and Ford talked to the Athens Banner-Herald about it. Now, listen, you know, the fact that Ford is being as open as he is about the interview taking place, you know, would lead me to wonder, just given the way everything else works at Georgia, where it's kind of behind closed doors and pretty quiet and pretty buttoned up, this seems a little different in regards to Ford's willingness to be kind of public about it. So you can kind of, you know, do with what you will on that. I guess if I had to guess, my assumption is the person that eventually gets hired at Georgia as defensive backs coach is probably still someone who has a lot of experience doing that at kind of the major college level. Ford, the fact that he's on Georgia's radar right now, probably suggests that he's one of those guys that could be in a position to get lots of these kinds of jobs in the future. And certainly he's very well respected for the work that he does with recruits and high school players and everything else. But in terms of what Georgia actually ends up doing, even though, you know, Ford's here talking to the Athens Banner-Herald about that and Football Scoop has reported it, my guess is that Georgia probably still leans on a more traditional name once it finally hires its defensive backs coach, someone who's been doing this at the major college level. Because as we've said many times, you know, we spent a few minutes talking about the, you know, the need for Georgia to kind of, you know, build a high-powered offense, you know, find a lot of players who are capable of doing a little bit of like what Mecole Hardman has done for the Kansas City Chiefs. And that's obviously a big part of the championship formula for Georgia this upcoming season. But you've also got to make sure that you kind of shore up this side of the ball there as well. Georgia loses a lot of defensive backs and now needs a defensive backs coach. Georgia's championship pursuit is also in a lot of ways going to be determined by how it handles this situation as well. So this will clearly be, with Ford's name added into the mix here and many more probably to come, a story that Georgia fans continue to watch. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. No matter how you get to us today, the truth is we're obviously so much more than a podcast. We're available streaming video, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon every single day in Athens on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We're available as a podcast as well on the Apple Player, the Google Player, Spotify, all the great podcast platforms. We post the show each and every day on the worldfamousdognation.com. So glad to have you with us. And I want to send a huge, huge thanks to our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia for making it all possible. You know, Pella Window and Door of Georgia can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. That's what they're famous for. That's what they do. It's the service that they provide on that makes them so well known as well. You know, it's a national company, but they've got a locally family-owned branch right here in Georgia, which means you get the resources that come from kind of a big company, but also the personal touch that comes when you deal with a family-owned company where the folks that are doing the work for you and handling your business are the ones that actually, you know, care about the outcome. That's one of the things that Pella Window and Door of Georgia is truly well known for. Also, how about some great savings right now on energy efficient windows and doors? Through February 18th, you can get $150 off windows, $350 off doors, or 0% APR for 36 months. So really, really good savings right there. Of course, the website, PellaBranch.com. That's the place to go, PellaBranch.com. Let me also tell you this, brand new phone number here. So make sure you listen to this phone number. This is the new phone number I want you to reach out when it comes to our friends at Pella Window and Door. Dial 678-638-1496. That's 678-638-1496. Tell them BA from Dog Nation Daily sent you over there, and tell them that I said that you were going to be hooked up with some great energy efficient windows and doors, making your house look good on the outside and feel good on the inside. That's what Pella will do for you. Just remember that new phone number, 678-638-1496. All right, coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk to John Stinchcomb. As I said before, Mecole Hardman continues the streak for Georgia of putting players in a Super Bowl. John Stinchcomb was obviously one of the former Georgia players who also got a chance to do that at one point in time. So we'll talk to John about what a special memory that was for him. Before we do that, though, let's go around the doghouse here today, assisted by our friends at AAA. And a little bit of news on the recruiting front. We're actually getting close to a five-star running back from the state of Alabama making his 2022 commitment decision. Let me show you the tweet here on the screen. screen from Emmanuel Henderson. Henderson says that he's going to be committing on March 13th, and he says that God is good. Now, the assumption here is that Henderson's final three includes Georgia, the in-state schools, both Alabama and Auburn kind of in on Henderson right now. So this is probably one worth paying attention to. Admittedly, part of me wonders Henderson making the announcement as early as he is, given just how much recruiting momentum Alabama has had of late. You almost wish they would wait a little while, because it's easy to imagine, you know, Alabama, the way they cleaned up to kind of close out the 2021 class, and really a lot of that's still ongoing, that, you know, that maybe they're in a good position here or there as well. However, a couple of Fridays ago, though, when Jeff Sintel, our Dog Nation recruiting insider, joined us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door, one of the things that he did mention, though, is don't be so quick to assume that Henderson's just a rubber stamp to either Alabama or possibly even Auburn because he's in the Yellowhammer State, that the actual story might be a little more complicated than that. Let me let you hear this from Jeff Sintel on Emmanuel Henderson. Take a listen.
It's been like 8 months since we've written about a five-star back with his eyes on Georgia. Emmanuel Henderson is the number one running back in the country. He's out of Alabama, and I know everybody's going, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. Hit the reverse button, you know, hit the B, 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 B. But he is a Georgia native.
A couple things there that Jeff says I think are pretty interesting. First of all, the fact that, you know, when it comes to true five-star running backs, it does seem like it's been a minute since we've talked about some of those that, you know, obviously for a long time it seemed like we're talking about the same crop of five-stars over and over and over again. But the last few months, it was kind of quiet on that front, you know, related to Georgia. But obviously back here doing that again when it comes to Henderson. And as Jeff says, you know, he does originally hail from the state of Georgia, so maybe that's something to kind of counterbalance the fact that, you know, obviously as an in-state product for Alabama right now, that it would almost seem like certainly Alabama, possibly even Auburn as well, might have that inside track. Jeff says maybe that's not quite the case, although admittedly, as I said before, this early of a commitment date, just given how hot Alabama has been as of late, makes you a little nervous about that. As far as who Emmanuel Henderson is as a player, Jeff Sintel also talks to him about that as well.
He first of all compared him to a faster Kerryon Johnson. And in my book, that's a high praise. He says, listen, before Emmanuel got here, I had a play sheet the size of a Waffle House menu. And now that he's here, my play sheet is the size of an index card.
So really interesting stuff that, you know, Kerryon Johnson, certainly that is pretty high praise. Big work he did at Auburn, a more athletic, you know, a little quicker version of that. Also, as Jeff quotes the coaching staff there, saying that they really just lean on Henderson now and have simplified the playbook because of all the things that he does. So he's clearly a top-fly player, and he's only a couple of weeks away now from making his decision, and we'll continue to lean on Jeff Sintel for information about how this one might turn out as Georgia tries to stay in the mix here for a five-star running back for the class of 2022. It's Around the Doghouse. It's assisted today by our friends at AAA, and I love AAA's legendary roadside assistance. I love the fact that when really in the last couple of months, my wife and I have had to make use of this. Car breaks down, things like that. You're glad the AAA shows up and takes good care of you. But one of the other things that AAA is really, you know, very good about doing is taking good care of you all across the year as well, because when you sign up for a AAA membership, they work very hard to make sure that membership more than pays for itself. And one of the ways they do that is with the AAA Savings Hack Pack. It's a collection of features and benefits. It's worth more than $1,000. I'm talking about free career assistance, identity theft protection, up to 85% off prescriptions, discounts and food and essentials, and so much more. As I said before, it's a part of every AAA membership. It more than pays for itself over the course of the year. I want you to find out more about this by going to AAA.com/GoSavings. That's AAA.com/GoSavings. You can find out a lot more about that. Before we're done today on the show, man, there is a lot going on around the SEC. Some of it's kind of funny, Florida player kind of involved, or former Florida player kind of involved in something maybe he shouldn't have been doing. Kind of weird stuff out there about, you know, coaches on the move, not on the move. Some of this kind of stuff is just getting really, really strange in terms of some of these SEC staffs trying to put the finishing touches on their 2021 staff. Update of the Tennessee coaching situation. We will do all of that before we're done. Also some very funny Gator Hater roll call stuff before we're done today there as well. So we're busy before we're done, but for now, as you've come to expect on a Monday, great chance to talk some Georgia football with our buddy John Stinchcomb. Glad to have you with us as well.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
What's a little John Stinchcomb here. Always great to talk some Georgia football with him. John, just a tremendous voice when it comes to these kinds of things. And John, hope you're doing well. Happy Monday to you, and certainly thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. It's Monday, off to another good start to a week.
That's good to hear. And you know, John, I was talking a little bit before you joined us that one of the things I think that Georgia, the institution, is really proud of, many of the fans really proud of there as well, is Georgia's got this long streak that it's working on of former UGA players who've gone on to play in the Super Bowl. And I think you would say that for your career, the fact that you, you know, won a Super Bowl ring, you're a part of that with the New Orleans Saints, I'm guessing you're going to tell me that was one of the most special things that you were able to be a part of as a football player. As we prepare for another Super Bowl, this time with Tom Brady back in it as a Tampa Bay Buck, the Chiefs once again back in the big game, the fact that you were there, that you've got the hardware to prove it, what does that mean for you personally?
Well, it's amazing how many opportunities have presented themselves just from playing in a Super Bowl, but winning a Super Bowl. There's still so many different chances and invites and occasions where it seems to open so many doors. Obviously, it was a once-in-a-lifetime, except for if you're Tom Brady, experience for most of us. That, you know, I mean, the guy makes it an annual trip, but there's so many great players that have played this game, and I'm certainly not putting myself in that category, but there's so many great players that played this game and not had that opportunity, that for Georgia to be as well represented and to continue to have a presence in the Super Bowl is quite an accomplishment. I'm excited to watch annually just to see my dogs out there representing the G well.
Yeah, I think that's true. And it's one of those things where, to a degree, there's a randomness to the fact that Georgia's had, you know, as many guys as it had doing this year after year. But there's one aspect in which it's not really random, which is that, you know, you're putting a lot of guys into the NFL. A lot of those guys are having success once they get there. So, I mean, some of this is outside of Georgia's control and the fact that it has worked out as often as it has to have had a player playing in the Super Bowl. But if you don't have a bunch of guys in the NFL from your program, then this is just not even going to be mathematically possible at a certain point, right?
Now you just got to follow Tom around wherever he goes just to have that chance. But yeah, I think it speaks to the number of players that Georgia puts in the NFL. There's 32 teams, and I don't have the stats on it, but I'm guessing most of them have a Georgia player. There's probably few exceptions. I know there are some Georgia-heavy, Georgia-centric teams in the NFL, but when you have as many players, I'm sure we're still top five in universities that have active players in the NFL.
Yeah, that's
Your chances are definitely going to go up.
I don't want to get too far off the Georgia radar here, but you mentioned Tom Brady. I am kind of curious. I mean, as a player yourself, and you know, like you said, you were just, you know, you felt very blessed to even be able to be a part of that. Brady now going, I think it's the 10th time Brady's making it back to the Super Bowl. That almost seems superhuman. It almost seems impossible. I mean, as someone who played the game and know the wear and tear that takes in your body, obviously offensive line different than quarterback, but for Brady to still be doing this in his 40s and being back here for, you know, to the Super Bowl this many times, I mean, as a former player, how do you put that into words?
You take nothing away from Tom Brady. He's the best to have ever done it. I think this year kind of puts the exclamation point on the sentence that, yes, the Patriots for over a decade and a half were able to create an empire, but the fact that he's gone to Tampa, assimilated into their system, meshed well with Bruce Arians. Now, they're loaded. They've got a crazy amount of talent there, and it's probably why he chose to go to Tampa. But this really puts that exclamation point on the fact that he's an elite special player. It also says the game has changed. I mean, as a quarterback, player safety has never been more at a premium. I think back to the years where you watch Brett Favre just get bashed and get back up and continue to throw the ball around the field. You don't see that as much anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very conscious of player safety, specifically for quarterbacks. So I think it lends itself to longer careers. But guys like Brady, the amount of dedication it takes to take care of your body, it's year-round nutrition. Everything goes into having that sort of career and the sustainability that it demands.
One of the things I was talking about before you joined us to kind of, you know, get back to Georgia here a little bit more is when you look at Georgia won the SEC in 2017, averaged 35 points a game. The last three teams that have won the SEC, two of them have won national championships. The other played for a title. They've all averaged, what, more than 45 points a game, and the last two have averaged more than 48 points a game. You know, it's small sample size, but it's, you know, pretty telling that I think if Georgia wants to get it done in 2021, win the SEC, back in the college football playoff, recent history would suggest that something close to that kind of firepower is necessary. Even if you don't quite match what Alabama did this past year, what LSU did the year before that, you've got to be able to come close to it because that's what the last 3 years of the SEC have been. Champions in this league averaging more than 45 points a game. It's not an impossible thing for Georgia to do because there's plenty of talent there, but John, it's not an easy thing to do either, is it?
No, but it's certainly the way the game has changed. I think if you were to say 10, 20 years ago, defense wins championships, nobody would argue that point. Well, few people would. There's always the antagonist of the group, but the majority would say that wisdom holds true. That's no longer the case. I mean, you have got to be able to put up points at almost any level, and I think the way coordinators and coaches have figured out how to scheme, how to create such space and opportunity and utilize the rules that are in place that quite honestly favor the offense because this is a business of entertainment and people like to see exciting games. And 7-10, although maybe is a exhibition of talent on the defensive side, it's not all that entertaining to watch. So I think it certainly lends itself to a more fan-engaging atmosphere. And for those teams that aren't able to keep pace, they've been left behind, and they need to get up to speed. And I most certainly am not saying Georgia falls in that category. But for any team that's looking to be competitive on a national scale like Georgia is, you have to be able to put up points, and that's the way the game has changed and evolved and continues to develop, and Georgia is no different. They're going to have to find ways to score more than four touchdowns a game, just like anybody else who's competing on that national level.
One of the things that I actually don't think maybe Georgia fans have, at least based on the ones that I've had conversations with, and we do it every day here, one of the things I don't think Georgia fans have given enough consideration to is how much the year-over-year continuity is going to help with whatever Georgia's, you know, ceiling offensively ends up being, you know, 40-plus points a game or, you know, 45-plus points a game, whatever ends up being. The fact that Georgia brings back so much of what it had a year ago. Offensive line, not necessarily, and we'll get to kind of more of that topic before we're done here, but you're bringing back your top pass catchers. You're bringing back your top running backs. You expect to have your starting quarterback, you know, back there as well. When you look at Georgia in this preseason, we'll obviously do a lot of this in the months to come, that one of the things that I think that does really help Georgia is, from a percentage basis, how much of its, you know, rushing and receiving yards and passing yards from the previous year it now brings back for this upcoming season. John, that continuity I do think is a big ally for Georgia. However good it can be, we'll find out. But the process of being as good as it can be is certainly made better by the returning experience, I would say.
Yeah, I think when you maintain a core that plays at a high level, which Georgia has certainly done as it transitions 2020 to 2021, you have a chance. I think you look at some of the top programs, especially in the collegiate level, they seem to add pieces in specific places, and sometimes at vital places, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, maybe a defensive player here or there. I'm thinking of, you know, obviously Mac Jones and Kyle Trask and their emergence this year, but they step into a situation where there is a great core that surrounds them. Quinnen Williams a few years ago, defensive tackle from Alabama, was a no-namer, and then he's added to a great core of players. Well, I think that's what Georgia has. I think they have so many guys that return that then you can add pieces in specific places and it melds together really well because of the identity has already been created by that core group. And you just have to find those playmakers and various pieces to complement that body of players that you already know are coming back and kind of the bird in the hand of what they bring to the table.
In the time we have left, I want to spend some time talking about something I actually brought up to Jeff Sintel when he was with us on Friday. You and him had teamed up to do some of those videos, kind of looking at some of the 2021 offensive line signees. We've seen some of this at DogNation.com and on the Dog Nation video channels. And, you know, John, what I'd said to Jeff is that it's almost like there's a fatigue among Georgia fans about how many good offensive linemen that Georgia signed in recent years, that, you know, kind of hyping this group up, maybe there's a little less of that than there has been some of the previous classes, because I hate to say it this way, but it's almost become passe that Georgia has signed so many good offensive linemen. But when I watch some of the videos that you and Jeff have done, your analysis in particular of Amarius Mims and Micah Morris and Dylan Fairchild and some of these guys, Jared Wilson, you know, I just grow more and more impressed with what this group, I think, has a chance to be at Georgia. And some guys, maybe, you know, sooner rather than later on the field, but I think there's something to like about all of these guys. I've enjoyed your analysis of it. And I tell you, John, you know, apart from, you know, just what you had to say about them, the more that I look at these players, the more I come to realize that this 2021 group that Georgia signed, I think compares pretty favorably with some of the other recent you know, classes that Georgia's put together.
It's so amazing. It's impressive more than anything that Georgia has strung together the offensive line classes that they've been able to pull since Coach Smart has come to Athens, because the 4- and 5-star high-level, high-performing offensive linemen, that was not commonplace at Georgia. There was a 2-decade span where I think we were claiming John Theus as like the guy, right? And
right.
He had a good career and was a good player, but it seems like that caliber of player has become so commonplace that we take it for granted, that Georgia fans are going, yep, that's just another 4- or 5-star. And you're going, that's great that it's become so regular that we don't recognize this talent. But having watched, I mean, in preparation for this, that piece that Jeff and I did, I've watched a lot of high school football, and they play, the guys we got, Amarius Mims, Micah Morris, you watch these guys play, Jared, Dylan, I mean, we've got some dudes coming in, and you add that on top of some of those players, Clay Webb and Cedric Von Pong Granger, and guys that we haven't seen yet, I think there's a real chance that Georgia starts to develop themselves into, you know, I think of like Iowa, Wisconsin, yeah. Notre Dame. For years, those programs just continue to push out these high-level studs across the offensive line, and Georgia is starting to do that. That's not something that we've been known for. That's not something that we have done with any consistency. We've had some good offensive linemen come through, Cordy Glenn and Clint Bowling, and you know, there's a long list of guys, but it hasn't had that consistency of some of these top programs in Georgia now. Class after class continues to add to the depth and ranks and quality of that position group in a form and fashion that we are unfamiliar with. And the fact that we've almost taken it as commonplace now is a little bit shocking, because it's so foreign from what we've known prior to Coach Smart coming to town.
One name in particular I want to ask you about is Amarius Mims. I mean, you know, this is a guy that just seems to stand. We were actually watching this video a moment ago where he's, you know, he just stands so head and shoulders above, you know, his high school teammates, but really head and shoulders above so many of the recruits in this class there as well. Now, he's not the only one who has a chance to really make a contribution, but when you think about like those young offensive linemen who kind of almost give you that prodigy vibe, that prodigy feel, I mean, you know, Mims has a little of that, doesn't he, John?
Yep, and here's what I like most about Mims is, one, he's got something that you can't coach, and that's size. I mean, you turn on the film, and you don't have to look for his number because he stands out. And there's a lot of guys like that are just big and tall and long. But what he does that separates himself from the rest of the guys that might fit that size profile is that he uses it really well. He moves well. He understands his body. He's physical. He likes to get nasty with people. And there's some folks that do that in a way that they kind of lose. They make sacrifices that they're probably not going to be able to make it the next level. You know, if you sell out against a 220-pound high school defensive tackle, it might be a little different when you're going up against the Alabamas and SEC-caliber defensive tackles of the world. So just to watch the way he plays and utilizes that frame that he's been blessed with, I think that's what separates him. He's got good feet. He moves well, which, you know, most of the guys that you're talking about with these four and five stars, if you've been recruited to Georgia, you're going to say some of the same things over and over again. Guy, he moves well for his size. But Amarius is, he's not normal. I mean, he's big. He's bigger than your average guy. He's got the length and understands how to play and utilize those abilities more so than some of the other bigger frame, taller, lengthy tackles that you look at in high school. He's a step or two in front of where they're at developmentally.
Well, John, it's a great opportunity to get a chance to talk to you here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia today. I appreciate the analysis you've shared of the Georgia offensive lineman. I will invite folks to check out your, you know, film breakdown of those. We've been putting those up on DogNation.com and the Dog Nation video channels. I hope people will see those. That has been really good stuff. And, John, I certainly appreciate your thoughts on everything happening around UGA. And, of course, we'll look forward to getting a chance to speak to you there very soon as well.
Well, it's always fun, and I look forward to seeing this class because I think we got some real playmakers coming in that can help this team. So can't wait to watch their development and what the next 4 years brings for them.
I think that's really true, John. We'll look forward to talking to you soon. Thank you so much.
Go Dogs.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
I think one of the interesting things that John also brings up there as well is when you look at the signing class of 2020, the signing class of 2021, when you look at the way that all kind of comes together for Georgia and you realize that the transition that occurred from Sam Pittman as Georgia offensive line coach, really one of the best position coaches to do that. He leaves for kind of the dream job, a chance to go be Arkansas head coach, and a lot of programs in that situation would have really faltered. And Georgia didn't. Georgia was able to respond quickly, hired Matt Luke. Some people may say it wasn't a great year on the field for the Georgia offensive line this year in comparison to some of the other, you know, times. Be that as it may, this was still a group that performed, you know, just fine. And from a recruiting standpoint, have performed very well. Georgia has made this look easier than it is. It is not easy to go from a revered, ultimate respect offensive line coach like Sam Pittman to find a quality replacement for him and not really, you know, see, you know, much in the way of attrition from the overall talent level at the position, especially given the fact that Georgia's produced multiple first-round picks, yet a high-profile transfer out of the program, and yet Georgia has been able to kind of keep it on going. I think that speaks really well to the work that Matt Luke has done there, and obviously it'll be very, very interesting to see how all of this takes shape as you head towards spring practice, the upcoming season. We spent a lot of time talking about what Georgia can be offensively. Can they be that 40-plus point per game juggernaut that recent SEC and national champions have been? The offensive line and how it plays is going to go a long way towards determining that, figuring out how you replace departed starters, you know, figuring out what you're going to do at your left tackle spot and where that allows Jamari Salyer to then play on next year's offensive line. All of those are very crucial questions to answer. All right, a lot to do as far as our SEC through, so let's roll through this right now. Let me start with a wag of a finger to Luke Ankrum, former Florida defensive lineman, apparently, allegedly, getting into a little bit of a skirmish over the weekend, a bar down in Gainesville. He goes to and was not happy about a $5 cover charge. This is all, you know, very much found on the internet. Reports say that he was not happy with a $5 cover charge to get into the bar. So he like threw three wadded up $1 bills on the ground, ended up basically getting into a fight with the bouncer. At one point in time, I think he even grabbed like, you know, one of those barrier grates like the police use to kind of, you know, block off roads and things like that, and threw one of those. So a little bit of a rough night for Ankrum in Gainesville. I guess it's good to see the former Florida players keeping it classy. At least the allegation is. Kind of a weird story here where Mike Stoops, of course, you know him as a, you know, former Oklahoma defensive coordinator, has been working in Alabama as an analyst. And the word on the street was is that Stoops was going to leave Alabama for a spot on Texas' staff with Steve Sarkisian. I believe he's going to be the linebackers coach there. And so AL.com has reported that Stoops went so far as to, like, tell Alabama, the players, everything like that, hey, it's been great being here. I'm going to go coach with Steve Sarkisian at Texas. I'm going to be one of the position coaches there. And so this was, like, all on its way to being done. But the reports also have it out there that Sarkisian pulled the coaching offer from Stoops. And I guess, according to what a lot of people are saying, the reason why the Stoops coaching offer got pulled is apparently some higher-ups at Texas decided they didn't want anybody who was a relative of Bob Stoops. In this case, Mike Stoops is Bob's brother. They didn't want any of Bob Stoops' relatives coaching for Texas. Again, the fact that Bob Stoops had been in Oklahoma, obviously the Oklahoma-Texas rivalry is kind of a big deal, or a very big deal out there. And the folks there in Austin decided they did not want a Stoops on the coaching staff. So after Mike Stoops had told Alabama that he was leaving and kind of did the farewell tour down there in Tuscaloosa, now he's coming back to be an analyst again. What a strange story. And, you know, there's just a lot of weird politics at Texas. Now, I don't know how I'd feel about this either if, like, a former Florida guy or whoever else was going to come be, you know, the coach at Georgia. I'm not quite sure I'd feel about that either. But in this case, apparently Texas decided they didn't want it. Now Mike Stoops is kind of back being an analyst again, which is probably not what he wanted to be for this upcoming year. By the way, speaking of Alabama, there had been some chatter about who Bama might look at for its next running backs coach, with Charles Huff leaving that job to go be Marshall head coach. Graham, the guy from Tennessee, had been talked about a little bit here. It does look like, though, now, and I don't believe this is official, maybe it is, but I don't believe it's official yet, Bruce Feldman letting us know that Robert Gillespie, who's been running backs coach at North Carolina, is about to get the Alabama job. It may be official by the time, you know, you hear this, but it looks like Gillespie's going to get that. So it looks like Alabama's probably made a pretty good hire there. Gillespie coming over, apparently, according to Bruce Feldman, as a replacement for Charles Huff, who is now about to be Marshall head coach. Feldman also reporting this, that new Tennessee athletic director Danny White may target Clemson offensive coordinator Tony Elliott as its next head coach. Now, I think this is interesting for a couple of reasons. First of all, on the Georgia part of this, a lot of folks are wondering, not only can Georgia beat Clemson in week one, but can Georgia be what Clemson has been, one of the four best teams in the country in the college football playoff? Clemson's going to kind of been a fixture there. As I said on the show, I think it may have been Friday show or Thursday, Friday show, that one of the things that I think is a quiet ally for Georgia's championship pursuit is the fact that it does bring back its coordinators from the previous year. There is coaching continuity. Todd Monken is returning, as far as we know. Dan Lanning has said that he is returning after getting some overtures for Texas. These are guys that are coming back to Georgia. And I said before that you look at, you know, what Alabama had this year, continuity, its coordinator spot. LSU in 2019 did add Joe Brady, but Steve Ensminger had been there. Defensive coordinator had been there. That they'd had some of that continuity. Same thing, you know, other programs kind of had that continuity. When Alabama hired Steve Sarkisian for 2018, he'd actually been there on the staff, had been an analyst. That it seems like the major level of the college football playoff, the national championship, continuity has kind of mattered, and Georgia kind of has that. Well, Clemson has had that for a long time as well. Brent Venables has been defensive coordinator for what seems like 100 years. Elliott's been there for a while. It would be interesting to see, especially with Georgia looming in week one, how Clemson would manage an offseason without the continuity that's kind of become one of the hallmark calling cards of that program. If Elliott ends up getting hired away, you know, how Clemson kind of, you know, responds to all of that, that'd be interesting to see. However, this is another example of, I just think, kind of a short-sighted hire by Tennessee if it goes down. And there's all kinds of reports about other guys that could be considered. But the Elliott thing here is real enough that someone like Bruce Feldman's at least been, you know, kind of talking about that. And to me, it just kind of feels like another example of, you know, Tennessee just sort of grasping at straws to just sort of get whatever you can get. You know, the big power program, Alabama, let's go get their defensive coordinator that didn't work. The other big power program, Clemson, let's go get their offensive coordinator. Let's see if that works. It just seems like grasping at straws. It does not seem like much in the way of any real tangible plan. And certainly, you know, something that I would look at it and say, does it have any better chance, you know, chance of than just, you know, 50-50? Of even working out at all. This is such a strange situation. Danny White is a relatively respected, you know, administrator. He's worked his way up through the ranks here. But in terms of just going out and grabbing whatever coordinator, you know, has been good for one of the better teams, that's kind of already failed for Clemson. I'm not really quite sure I'd have much confidence I was in Knox with this particular situation. If they do go the Elliott route, has much chance of working out any better. Let me also mention this. One more SEC through story here today, and it has been so odd to watch the way the coaching carousel has kind of spun in the SEC. You know, South Carolina hired Tracy Rocker as its defensive line coach. Rocker had a lot of experience there and that. Seemed like a pretty good hire for new coach Shane Beamer, who was supposed to be at South Carolina because of his ability to hire really good assistants. And yet, before you even had a chance to blink, Rocker had cleaned out his desk in his office in Columbia. He'd been hired to go back to his alma mater, Auburn. And that's like the big coaching coup. Auburn steals Tracy Rocker away from South Carolina. I believe, and y'all can check my math on this, but I believe that Auburn had to pay the buyout to South Carolina to hire Tracy Rocker. So there was a little bit of, you know, financial maneuvering that had to take place for something like this. Well, now, lo and behold, it seems like the Philadelphia Eagles may be ready to take Rocker from Auburn. So if you're following me on this, Auburn steals Tracy Rocker from South Carolina, and now the Philadelphia Eagles may be stealing Tracy Rocker from Auburn. It's a little bit like one of those white elephant Christmas things where you're like passing the gift to the left. I feel like that's the way that some of these SEC coaching searches have gone thus far this offseason, with some guys employed for about 5 minutes at one place before they end up going somewhere else. In Tracy Rocker's case, he may have two of those before it's all said and done here if he does truly land with the Philadelphia Eagles. We will make that your SEC through. And to wrap things up here on a Monday, I want to give out a couple of Golden Shoe winners today. One of them of the traditional variety, and a couple of other that are just, people are still having fun with this Tennessee thing, so who am I to stop that? First of all, let me actually begin with the Georgia Florida one, if you don't mind. Our buddy Mad Dog, who sends this in. Here we go. Mad Dog taking a little takeoff on the Bernie Sanders meme. Of course, you've seen Bernie Sanders with the mittens on, everything else. He's got him arms folded, sad, Florida hat on there at Ben Hill Griffith Stadium with a Not My Coach sign. Pretty good job by our buddy at Mad Dog 19. He's a multi-time winner of the Golden Shoe. But to see Bernie there in the swamp, not a bad job there by Mad Dog. Now a couple of really good Florida ones. Let's do Joel Sidney Kelly here. Very funny look at Ronald McDonald being hired as a Tennessee coach. That's a good job by Joel, who's very good at the stuff. And then one more, Jeremy Pruitt with the McDonald's drive-thru with the money back coming there from our buddy Sugar Ray for UGA. Really funny stuff all the way around. Great job to all of our Golden Shoe winners today. Normally a time to mock Florida, but listen, we'll make an exception to mock Tennessee a little bit here too. Y'all have a great Monday. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia.